Benjamin Norton Bugby, Sacramento's Champagne King, written and spoken by Kevin Knaus. Chapter 3, The Legend of Lawman Bugby, 1856-1861. Benjamin Norton Bugby was not an imposing man. He stood 5 feet and 8 inches tall. In 1856, he was elected the first Granite Township Constable. He was 29 years old. His hair was already starting to thin on top, but he could sport a full beard. He had blue eyes and a clear voice full of conviction. Upon his return to Sacramento, he was still looking for his career path. He didn't have huge ambitions and was not driven by greed. He was looking for an occupation that would make for a comfortable living in the new town of Folsom. With his election as constable, the very modest wages the position paid would allow him to dabble in real estate and mining on the side. While Bugby was active in local politics, he never expressed, at least by his actions, any particular desire to enter into law enforcement. When the squatters' riots broke out in Sacramento in the winter of 1850, he had already left the city to return to the mines. However, he undoubtedly heard of the chaos and deaths in Sacramento as a result of the confrontation between squatters in the city and the property owners. At first glance, the newly created town of Folsom would seem to have been on the same path of confrontation. The rolling foothills above Negro Bar were dotted with mining camps and shacks. Suddenly, imaginary lines were drawn in the form of a city grid. The lots were sold to the highest bidder, irrespective of the claims of any miner who might have happened to be calling that patch of land home. In order for Folsom to grow and thrive, the squatters had to be pushed off so the new owners could build homes and businesses. Bugby had invested in the new shining city on a hill. Perhaps he saw the inevitable clash between squatters and new lot owners on the horizon. Becoming constable of Granite Township might have been an attempt to help keep peace and let the new town thrive. Bugby was himself a bridge between the placer gold mining of the past and the suburban town lot living of the present. Whatever the reason, Folsom never had the riots between squatters and landowners that Sacramento did, but it had its own brand of lawlessness instigated by men who were no longer earning a living from mining. Small gangs of men who robbed other miners had long been a problem in the gold fields. Now this new township of Granite had a man dedicated to eradicating burglaries and highway robbery. As new homes and businesses sprang up, thieves took advantage of the new dwellings. Bugby was not immune to the criminal acts. After tracking down a horse thief in Alder, Bugby found property that had been stolen from his wife, Mary Jane, in the man's possession. In 1857, the town of Folsom was full of activity, sounds, and smells. New little frame homes were being built. There was the sound of handsaws and men pounding nails. The American River could be heard coursing over granite outcroppings below the town. There was the sound of miners down by the water and possibly next door to a home that was being built. The gold mines were immigration central for people all over the world. It would not have been uncommon to hear different dialects and languages from Asia and Europe while hiking over the hills of this growing little community. Horse-drawn wagons and stagecoaches clattered through town. Then there was the steam horse that was helping Folsom grow. The cars and locomotives of the Sacramento Valley Railroad could be heard rolling on the rails, blowing their steam whistles. There was the ever-present fog of wood smoke from the train, homes, and restaurants, along with smell of food cooking in the air. It must have been quite a mixing bowl of sounds, smells, energy, and people that Bugby woke up to every morning. He, like so many other men and women in town, was a worker. In order to survive, one had to work. Since coming to California in 1849, Bugby had diligently pursued whatever activity he was engaged in. First it was mining, then running a trading post, then back to mining. He managed hotels, sold furniture, and grew vegetables on a farm. He had worked at all of these different occupations over the course of 7 years since coming to Sacramento. Constable B. N. Bugby. His latest endeavor as Constable of Granite Township would occupy a good portion of his time. Even though Granite Township had been cleaved from the much larger Mississippi Township in 1856, it was still a large tract of land to patrol. It drew its name in part from the large granite outcroppings along the American River and for the granite city that was rechristened Folsom. The American River was the northern and partial western boundary of the township. It then encompassed land 8 miles to the south and then to the west to Salisbury Station. Granite Township was over 22 square miles of mostly open prairie. The main towns were Folsom, Alder Creek, Salisbury Station, and Prairie City. The office of constable was similar to being a sheriff's deputy, with a defined territory to service. The constable was empowered to arrest people, bring them before the justice of the peace, escort people accused of crimes to the main jail, and serve summons issued by local courts. Even though Granite Township did not have nearly the population of Sacramento City, Bugbee was nonetheless kept busy. He had no deputies to help him. There were plenty of demands on Bugbee's time for law enforcement and court services. If Bugbee exhibited any partiality to the ethnicity of a man under suspicion of committing a crime, it was not reported in the local papers. He arrested men who were white, black, Hispanic, and Chinese during his tenure as constable. There were arrests for stealing horses and saddles, residing in a house of ill fame, gambling, maliciously shooting an ox, burglary, counterfeit silver coins, drunken brawls, knife attacks, and murder. Bugbee also learned how to use his pistol. When attempting to arrest an escaped convict, the man started to withdraw a revolver from his pants pocket. Bugbee was quicker and shot the man in the shoulder. A few of Bugbee's law enforcement activities made it into the local newspapers. In 1856, he served a summons to E. Anthony. In 1857, he escorted accused horse thief to the Sacramento jail, arrested a Chinese man for burglary, arrested three Chinese for residing in a house of ill fame, arrested Chinese men for illegal gambling, arrested a man for malicious mischief in shooting an ox, tracked down a horse thief in Alder Creek. In 1859, he arrested a man for stealing 16 cows and attempting to sell them for $300 and a gold watch. In 1860, he arrested a man for murder, shot an escaped convict in the shoulder who was attempting to draw his own pistol on Bugbee. He was involved in the apprehension of a man passing counterfeit silver coins, arrested a man accused of stealing saddles from Henry and Gage in Placerville, and arrested a Chinese man accused of a knife attack on a fellow Chinese immigrant. He also oversaw the arrest of many men involved in drunken brawls, knife fights, and murders in Granite Township. Wild West Roundup of Folsom Robbers. Bugbee's reputation as the tenacious lawman was secured with the apprehension of several outlaws. It was a series of events worthy of a screenplay for a Hollywood movie about the Wild West. There was the young constable, outgunned by a gang of highway robbers in a growing 1850s gold rush town. A secret plan to bring in extra lawmen, deputies slipping into town incognito on the railroad, the surprise arrest, daring escape, and finally a shootout in the hills above Folsom. The capture of a notorious gang of thieves would help propel Bugbee to be elected sheriff of Sacramento County. Even though the heady days of the Placer Gold Rush were over, Folsom was a town that was thriving with the arrival of the Sacramento Valley Railroad. While some men, many of them immigrants, continued the arduous task of separating gold from dirt, usually for as little as 50 cents a day, other men found work driving wagons in construction or on the railroad. Still others, preferring a more carefree lifestyle, supplemented their incomes with robbing miners and merchants who were making an honest living. Since there was strength in numbers, many of the robbers formed loose associations of gangs. These gangs preyed on the Chinese and other immigrants, vulnerable because of their lack of language skills and aversion to reporting crimes lest they be asked to leave their shacks or cabins. Since these immigrant miners typically were not living in town, but usually staying in a tent or shack next to their mining claims along the river or tributaries, they were isolated and easy targets for criminals. However, Mr. Myers, who had come over from France to mine in California, did report a burglary. A gang of men broke into his miner's shack on Mississippi Bar and stole $180 in gold. Another tactic of the thieves was to rob miners and merchants along the roads between Folsom and the mining areas. Along the American River, just north of Folsom, the canyon gets very steep and narrow. People traveling along the river between Folsom and communities such as Mormon Island or McDowell Hill on the South Fork of the American River would climb out of the river canyon where it was intersected by a ravine that emptied an ephemeral creek into the river. The ravine was wooded and narrow with many good hiding spots. It became a favorite place for gangs of thieves to intercept travelers and acquire their valuable possessions. After so many robberies of travelers along the road in the ravine, it became known as Robber's Ravine. Two of the outlaws were Tom Bell and Bill Scott, who each led separate groups of men in committing these highway or trail robberies. The loose-knit gangs, each numbering about a dozen men, were robbing miners and stealing from cabins throughout Granite Township. By himself, Bugby couldn't round up all the men to face charges. If he were to arrest each man associated with the gangs one by one over several weeks, other members of the gang would undoubtedly be tipped off and they would evaporate. The best way to clean up the scourge of criminal conduct plaguing the area was to have a coordinated plan with other deputies. The major hurdle was getting authorization for Sacramento Sheriff's deputies to work with him. The only ways to make the 22-mile trip from Folsom to Sacramento were on horseback, in a buggy, or on the train. Even though the train trip from Sacramento only took an hour, it still cost money. Bugby had to gain the cooperation of the county sheriff to let him work with some of the deputies who were primarily assigned to patrol the city of Sacramento. The goal was to apprehend as many of the gang members over a short 2 to 3 day time frame so that word of the coordinated roundup would have less chance to circulate among the thieves. Bugby recruited Sheriff Deputies Daniel Gay and Charles O'Neill in the plan. On a warm July day in 1857, Bugby and his cohorts put their dragnet for criminals into action. It was a Wednesday evening when Gay and O'Neill traveled up to Folsom in the baggage car of the Sacramento Valley Railroad train to hide their arrival. They all dressed down so as not to alert people they were officers. The night was uneventful, as they did not encounter any of the gang members. The next morning, while scouting across the rolling dry foothills around Folsom for one of the gang members, Frank Ewing, officers Gay and O'Neill encountered another escaped state convict by the name of Ned Waldo. Gay drew his revolver, and Waldo acquiesced and was taken into custody without incident. Continuing, Gay and O'Neill found Frank Ewing's house, but Ewing ran out the back door, jumped into the American River, and swam to the other side, which was El Dorado County. They decided not to pursue Ewing, but instead marched Waldo back to Folsom. Both deputies and prisoners got on board the train back to Sacramento to deposit Waldo in the jail, but the work was not finished. Deputy O'Neill got off the train at Alder Creek Station and returned to Folsom on the next train, leaving Gay to continue on to Sacramento with his prisoner. That evening, having turned Waldo over to the jailers, Gay returned to Folsom via horse and buggy, arriving about 8 o'clock. As Gay arrived back in Folsom, O'Neill and Bugby succeeded in arresting Mountain Scott and A. Clark while the pair were in a store buying boots. Gay and Bugby then visited a local dance hall where they arrested Jack P. O'Hara and Limers Weed. The suspects were taken back to the temperance house where O'Neill had assumed the duties of temporary jailer for the growing number of apprehended gang members. The team of lawmen got word that two other gang members were at a dance hall in Sacramento. O'Neill stayed with the prisoners while Bugby and Gay traveled by train to Sacramento. There, the duo found and arrested John Wright, manager of the dance hall on L Street between 3rd and 4th Streets, and J.W. Gafford. The arrest was made near daybreak on Friday morning as the festivities of the dance hall were winding down. Bugby and Gay then stopped by the jail to pick up Waldo and took all three men back to Folsom. 7 prisoners were brought before Justice of the Peace Schofield of Granite Township. The charges related to the robbing of the Frenchman by the name of Myers, who was mining at Mississippi Bar on the American River. As the arraignment of 7 individuals is quite a show in a little town, it attracted a lot of attention from the locals. One man who came to watch the proceedings was Charles Hamilton, who happened to be one of the gang members. Officer O'Neill, who was in attendance, offered Mr. Hamilton a seat, which he gladly accepted. When the proceeding concluded, and as Mr. Hamilton was preparing to leave, Officer O'Neill placed the handcuffs on him. With all the prisoners taken to the Sacramento jail, Officer Gay returned to Folsom on the Friday afternoon train. O'Neill was to telegraph the lawmen up in Folsom if he learned of any news about the remaining gang members. On Saturday morning, Gay and Bugbee arrested two men by the names of Jackson and Henry Berry, who kept a den near Robbers Ravine. After being arrested, Jackson wanted to get his coat from his house. Gay and Bugbee accompanied him to the house where his wife was cooking dinner. Jackson then requested that he be allowed to eat since he had no food all day. The two lawmen agreed to the request. When Jackson was done with dinner, he hugged his wife and bolted out the back door, lawmen in pursuit. Gay ran out the front door to intercept the fugitive. Jackson presented a pistol in the direction of Gay. Bugbee fired his pistol three times at Jackson, who was not hit. Gay's gun misfired twice. Jackson continued to run through the chaparral into a wooded area. He stopped and took aim at Bugbee. Gay stopped, set, and pulled the trigger, and the gun successfully fired, hitting Jackson in the leg below the knee. Jackson tumbled down, and the lawmen rushed over to him, assuming he was incapacitated. As they neared the downed man, Jackson reared up, pointed his gun at Gay, and fired. Even though the officer had been working for the past 4 days straight, weary from all the arrests and travel, he was able to quickly react and move behind a tree. As both Bugbee and Gay had their pistols trained on Jackson, and he was in terrible pain from the shattered leg, he threw his pistol aside and surrendered upon the commands of the officers. Gay bound up the badly bleeding leg of Jackson. They procured a buggy and arrived back in Sacramento around 5 o'clock with both prisoners. At 11 o'clock that night, O'Neill arrested another gang member, Joe Burrows, at a house on the alley between M and N Streets east of 2nd Street. Within a period of 4 days, the three officers arrested 11 felons and only lost one to escape. Bugbee was widely praised for organizing the successful plan. Gay and O'Neill were praised for their efforts, but had their pay docked by the council for being out of Sacramento City. No good deed goes unpunished. While Bugbee was credited with eliminating some of the less desirable elements of the Wild West in and around Folsom, he was also acknowledged for his integrity and adherence to the rule of law and due process afforded accused criminals under the Constitution. One of the examples reported in the local newspapers centered on a murder in Brighton Township. William Price and Robert Poole were working at the ranch of Frank Favor. In an earlier altercation, Poole felt that Price had insulted one of his friends and chided Price over the incident. Poole also indicated that if he had a gun, Price would not be alive. Even though Price, a young man of 22, apologized, Poole ordered Price to leave the ranch or he would kill him. Price then offered Poole a pistol for an impromptu duel. Poole refused the duel but continued his admonitions that Price leave the ranch within 1 hour in an aggressive manner. Price snapped, drew one of his guns, and fired at Poole. More gunshots ensued until Poole fell to the ground with a fatal gunshot. A fellow ranch hand who witnessed the altercation and fatal shots advised Price to leave immediately. Price was last seen fleeing toward Folsom. 5 days later, in mid-August, Price was captured above Placerville. El Dorado County authorities turned Price over to Constable Bugbee, who presented him to the Justice of Peace in Brighton Township. The return of Price to the neighborhood of the crime incited many of the local residents. There was an attempt to organize a vigilante group of residents to wrest control of Price from Bugbee so they could lynch Price on the spot. The Sacramento Union noted it was the boldness and firmness of Officer Bugbee, along with the presence of Officer McClory and Coroner Murray, that probably quelled the attempt to lynch Price. In addition to his law enforcement duties, Bugbee was also the township's lost and found department. He advertised in the local papers about a horse that was brought to him that might have been stolen. Taken up, a sorrel horse, about 15 hands high, white stripe on face, branded ADS on left hip, Spanish brand on right hip, letter A on right side of neck, right hind hoof cracked, supposed to be stolen. Inquire of B.N. Bugbee, constable at Folsom. With no administrative staff, Bugbee had to learn about bookkeeping and government bureaucracy the hard way. The auditor for Sacramento County rejected some of Bugbee's expense claims that he had submitted. Of the $224.04 for the July 1859 expense reimbursement submitted by Bugbee, the $14.40 mileage expense for searching for persons to arrest was rejected. The auditor noted there was no law to authorize payment for such services. Another expense claim was rejected for Bugbee's time spent in court proceedings. The auditor noted that the Constable's Fee Bill expressly exempts payment for such court proceeding services. The tussle between Sacramento County and Bugbee over expense claims would settle into a familiar pattern over the years. Instead of just accepting how the supervisors or auditor told him to proceed, Bugbee always seemed to push the envelope of accepted claims and expenses. The position of constable during that time came up for re-election annually. Bugbee was re-elected every year he ran for the office. As the county entered a period of civil war in the spring of 1861, Bugbee was nominated for Sacramento County Sheriff by the Union Democrat Party. A new chapter in Bugbee's life was about to begin.